The internet is a dark place, and it's getting easier for child predators to hide there. Federal and central Illinois prosecutors have filed three wildly different child exploitation, sexual abuse, and trafficking cases in the last several weeks. WJLT correspondent Edith Brady Lunny talks with U.S. Attorney John Millhiser about the techno arms race between law enforcement and child predators.
Most of the cases we see are from these predators online who are having access to our children and then pretending to be somebody else, oftentimes, different name, different age, and asking for sexually explicit pictures or trying to arrange a meeting to meet with them or possibly sending pictures of themselves. We also see individuals that might not be asking for this information or making contact with these children, but just are out in these chat rooms where they're exchanging child pornography, transferring and sharing all these oftentimes horrific pictures. I mean, you know, we think of, oh, it's just a 15-year, 16-year-old, a boy or girl naked. It is that, but it gets much, much worse. Horrific things happening to children much, much younger, as young as 2-3 infants.
So how does a case come to your office? What's that process like?
A variety of ways. We are very fortunate in the Central District to have extremely dedicated law enforcement, both at the state level, the local level, and also the federal level. With regard to the federal level, the FBI and the HSI have dedicated units that investigate these types of cases. We also work very closely with the Secret Service. We work with ICAC through the AG's office. We work with local prosecutors. So it's a team approach of how we identify these perpetrators and identify victims. That's the other thing about these cases that we have found: when we identify a perpetrator because a victim came forward and we start the investigation, there are other victims out there that were only identified because this one victim came forward. The lesson for parents is, you know, make sure you talk to your children, because not only are you protecting them, there are other victims out there that need to be saved, need to be identified, and we need to get these predators off the street, but we have to identify them first.
And there are consequences for the adults if the adults are in any way responsible for what's going on with these kids as well, right?
Well, the consequences for adults in that, you know, if they are the ones requesting the information or getting the information from these children, there's child exploitation, there's grooming. So I think one of the questions you asked was, how do the cases come to the federal side and the U.S. Attorney's Office? Well, we constantly are in contact with our state court prosecutors. So we have 46 counties. We have constant communication with them, both to identify the case and then figure out where is the best forum to prosecute this case, where would this individual, quite frankly, go away for the longest, based on the information and the specific facts in the case and the applicable law when we look at state law violations and federal law violations.
How has the internet changed all of this? I was talking with a local prosecutor yesterday, and he said that it used to be that people got caught because their computers would break down and they would take them in to shops, and other people would find this material on their computers. Now that's not so much the case, and so it's getting harder and harder to catch people because the systems are so much more sophisticated.
Oh, I mean, he's 100% right. So in several different areas, it makes it more difficult. So let's say, you know, go back 20 or 30 years ago or even more, it used to be that, you know, somebody takes a picture and they want to develop it. Well, they either have a dark room in their basement, which there were those cases, or they'd go to Walgreens or some other place and have those pictures developed, and leads would come from that. That very rarely happens now because people aren't developing film like that. You know, they take pictures on their phones and keep it on their phones. Then it went to, we had computers and hard drives. So you'd go in, law enforcement would grab that hard drive, take it, and look at it. Well, now it's even going to, everything is on a phone or on a laptop. So it's much more mobile. The ability for these predators to not have to have some big hard drive or contraption. They can do everything from their phone. They can be mobile. They can, with different apps, hide their identity. That's another thing that's very, very scary when you look at these advancements in the digital age and encryption. So encryption serves a very valuable service, obviously, right, with banking and other ways where we want to keep our information secret. We want to provide protections for individuals that are using the internet. But when encryption then can help these predators hide who they are and hide this information that's flowing, it becomes this lawless space where we can't access them. And that's a concern with regard to warrant-proof encryption. And so what I mean by that is that's where, so we have a warrant where there is probable cause. A judge has said, yes, there is probable cause that there will be evidence of a crime in that information, and yet the service providers do not turn over the information, and it's encrypted. That is a big concern for law enforcement and for those that want to protect our children and our communities.
Who are we talking about when we're talking about providers?
We're talking about providers, you know, whether it be Facebook or other providers, which are going to these encrypted apps that only can be decrypted by the end user. So, for example, you know, now if we uncover something on, let's say, Facebook, and we go to a judge and get a warrant, then we contact Facebook, we can't get that information. And that is incredibly important. We've had cases here in the Central District where, because of that information, we found victims out of state that never would have been known about but for this information that was received. So then if it goes to encrypted where we can't access it even with a warrant, that is a big, big concern for law enforcement, and it should be for everybody.
How common is it to have a triggering event to catch somebody? In other words, you weren't even necessarily looking at them as a purveyor of pornography, but they're arrested for something else, and there's a search warrant executed for other materials, or you get their cell phone, and you find it.
You know, I think that happens. There's a whole host of ways that the information becomes known to law enforcement. You know, we have law enforcement that are out there actively looking for these individuals, and, you know, trying to identify them out on the internet, out in this space. We have just sort of the random investigation for something else, grab the phone, have probable cause to look into the phone, and identify these pictures, which leads to other individuals. We have parents contacting law enforcement, which I, quite frankly, we should have more of that. We should have parents that are routinely, all the time, having conversations with their children about what they're doing, who they're talking to on the internet. Everybody has a smartphone, it seems like. I mean, you know, age, what, 8 or 10 on up, everybody has a smartphone with the ability to reach across the world and talk to somebody. So parents need to be aware of that and need to have conversations very routinely with their children to see who they're having contact with on the internet. Because a lot of these predators will then prey, send a picture, they send a picture, then they extort them. Hey, I'm going to tell everybody you're going to get in trouble. I'm going to harm your family unless you meet me. Mm-hmm. And you engage in sexual activities with me. And so those threats are happening. Law enforcement is trying to find them, but a lot of the ways we uncover this information and find the victims and the predators is through the parents.
So we have this new concept called sextortion of people that are just trying to blackmail people into that. So that's a whole new realm as well of
It is. And so in those cases, we work very closely with our state and local partners to figure out, hey, where are we going to prosecute this individual? First, we need to identify him. And we need to stop that activity and protect these victims. And then we need to go after and prosecute these individuals. But yes, we've seen that with blackmailing, with threatening to expose these pictures of somebody unless they do something. And this isn't only for children. It is for children, but also adults. We're threatening to expose these photographs or these pictures that were taken in private. And those cases obviously are important too.
Yeah. What about the initiative that your office has just targeting this? Is there anything you want to say about the Safe Childhood Initiative?
Right.
Well, what are the resources that bring to bear there?
You know, Project Safe Childhood was started years ago, and every U.S. attorney office and every U.S. attorney, there's 93 of them, is tasked with making this a priority. And it has to be. When you look at what these predators can do to destroy families, destroy lives, you know, impact our children and our future, we have to be able to go after them. And we do. So we work very closely with the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children, Project Safe Childhood, through DOJ. What we have in our office and every district has is we have a specific AUSA. That is their main function, to prosecute those cases. Also in the Central District, we have 4 branches, so each branch has a specific AUSA who is the liaison with law enforcement to investigate those cases, to provide the resources needed, to work closely with those state's attorneys in those counties in their area to identify and prosecute these individuals. And the other thing that's important is not lose sight of, not only do we want to stop this behavior and lock up the predators, we want to provide resources to the victims out there. Mm-hmm. So in our office, we have a victim witness group, and we have three individuals that work very closely with victims in these cases to provide services to help them along the process. Because what we can't forget is that while you know we're doing our job in law enforcement and prosecute these individuals and locking these individuals up, there are victims that have to deal with this, not only now, but for the rest of their life. Mm-hmm. So we have to provide the resources to those individuals, which we may, there's a strong effort to do that and make sure these individuals have all the resources they need, whether it be counseling or whatever they need to help them deal with these oftentimes horrific things that have happened to them.
Mm-hmm. What do you see in terms of a trend for this? Is this something that is growing or something that you feel like it's getting a handle on it because of the technology that you have on your side of the table?
Right. I think it's good and bad. I think the bad is that with the advances in technology, I think we're going to see the different and creative ways that these predators prey on our children. I think on the good side is law enforcement is really doing a great job of keeping up with that technology. There are resources and priorities placed in these types of cases. And as I said before, we are very fortunate here in the Central District to have a very active FBI, HSI, Secret Service, Postal, State Police, local law enforcement, all working together to attack this problem. Everyone on it's on their radar, and it has to be a priority, and it is. So while there's advancements in this kind of digital age, and these perpetrators and predators are getting more advanced and more creative in the ways that they can lure our children, they can commit these heinous crimes, law enforcement is keeping up with it.
What's your advice to parents?
Well, it's difficult to be a parent always, and I think in this digital age, it's even more difficult. A couple things, you need to have conversations with your children about their cell phone. And remember, you probably bought them their cell phone. So you can have some control over when they use it and how they use it. So if you're a parent, make sure you have those conversations. And then also regular monitoring of what apps they're on, what they're doing, what they're sending out, and just reminding them that whatever they send out, it needs to be reinforced with your child that that's out there forever. You know, that photograph, that message, that anything is out there. You don't know who else is going to see it. Mm-hmm. So oftentimes, if you wouldn't say it face-to-face or you wouldn't do it face-to-face, don't think you can hide behind your phone and send it out and nobody else is going
to
see it.
Does schools have a role to play in this as well to help prevent and spread the word that, you know, your devices can be something that could be very detrimental?
Oh, I think very much so. I mean, I you know, school plays a large part in a child's life. They spend a large amount of time there. Oftentimes, you know, during the school year, more time there than they do at home. Teachers and schools do play a part and can reinforce good, safe online habits. I know I have regularly, I did a state's attorney, and I'll also from this position, you know, offer outreach to schools to say whether it be to a PTO and parents, and because there's conversation you have to have with parents so they understand how big a problem this is, but also to students in safe internet use. And the dangers that are out there. So schools can play a part in reinforcing good, safe internet use.
I think as a society, people want and expect really stiff punishment for people that are convicted of this. Mm-hmm. I know in McLean County a couple years ago, a guy got 265 years.
Mm, that's a long time.
Yeah, that's a long time. Mm-hmm. And that's longer than you would get in most murder cases. So it seems like the crimes against children are in a class by themselves.
They are, and as they should be, when you look at the horrific things that these individuals do, the sentences are lengthy, as they should be, to protect our children.
You know, you're looking for someone sitting in a home or in a community that you're trying to apprehend, and you may not have the local resources to be able to do that. So this cooperative it's not just national. It's really an international effort when you look at it. It goes beyond the borders of the United States to try to catch these people, right?
Very, very much so. And that's where, you know, the partnerships that we have. One way that, you know, these partnerships can help is when you look at where these perpetrators are, oftentimes they're not only out of state, they're out of the country. So that's where when you look at the FBI and the federal resources that are available to identify these individuals and prosecute and extradite them and bring them back, it is essential that there is this communication and partnership because while the person could just be down the street in their parents' basement, they could also this could also be a coordinated ring run out of some European country, and all hands on deck approach needs to be taken to go after these predators.
John Millhiser is the U.S. Attorney for the Central District of Illinois. He spoke with correspondent Edith Brady Lunny. This is Sound Ideas on 89.1 FM, WGLT, and WGLT.org.